Hey, everybody, and welcome to the True Crime Squad. This is Katie Weaver. I'm here with my sister, co-host, and partner in crime, Christy Brower. Hello.
Hello. Hey, everybody.
How's it going?
It's good. I've declared it spring. I wore shorts today.
Wow.
I didn't wear any socks today.
What? Who do you think you are?
I need a jacket, and I was a little chilly. Yeah. I'm done. Done, I tell you.
It is gorgeous.
So it's good. It is gorgeous. I got a soda at Dutch Bros. I've been getting iced coffees. It's just
really
happening, goddammit.
Well, okay then. I'm here
if
for
I have
it.
To do it in a snowstorm, I'm doing it because done with this winter.
I'm here with you. I actually went to Walmart in capri pants and sandals. I'm just like you.
Well, look at you. Way See? To go. You know what's up then.
Yep.
Sometimes you just have to force this. And you just have to be like, listen, Mother Nature, I'm done with your bullshit.
Yep.
And it's spring.
Well, it's also Ostara today. And we're moving close to the spring equinox. I mean, it's time.
It's spring. I mean, come on.
Yep. It's time. Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing we are moving closer to, of course, is D-Day for old Chad Daybell. So this
yes.
is our... The second part of our Chad Daybell wrap-up, we started this yesterday, just wanting to do a couple of episodes where we really just talked about Chad's case as a whole, and then today we reserve this time more to talk about some of the things that we can anticipate coming up with the trial, answer some of your questions from YouTube and Facebook that have been asked, and just kind of push along that direction. So at this moment, Chad should be... being transported any minute now. He has to be at the Ada County Courthouse by the 22nd. Today's the 19th. That's about a 4.5 hour, 5 hour ride to get him there. And they, with Lori, they did just transport her via vehicle. They didn't try to fly her. I can't imagine it'll be any different with Chad.
No.
But that'll be happening shortly. So he'll be out of the Fremont County Jail. And then he'll be in the Ada County Jail, which will be an enormous shock.
Yeah. Wow. Because Fremont is so little. Little, guys. And it's only men. It's a very small jail. But Ada.
Yep.
So much. To give you perspective, this I was thinking about this. How do you think about it? Okay. There are 2,000 qualified potential jurors in Fremont County. There are 300,000 potential qualified jurors in Ada County.
Yeah.
If difference. That tells you anything about the difference in population.
Big difference. Yes.
It's going to be a rude awakening.
Yeah. Chad's not going to know what hit him. The thing is, you guys have to know, is that when Chad went to jail, Chad had never been to jail in his life. Chad was a good little Mormon boy who walked on water around here and was well respected and did what he wanted. And the idea of him even visiting a jail probably would have curled his little toes. So
he never had a limitation really of any kind in his life, considering.
So to be thrown in jail was,
whoa,
that's, yeah. A big whoa. So Ada's going to be something for old Chatty boy. It's going to be a real shock. The food is probably better. Yeah. John Pryor is going to be thrilled for him to be down there because he will be now within about 30 minutes of him versus, about 5 hours of him. So he's going to like it a lot. But that transition will be happening soon. So next week, potential jurors will be heading into the Ada County Courthouse to fill out the potential juror questionnaire. They are sending out thousands.
Yeah.
Thousands. I mean, it was hard enough to get a jury for Lori. Now we have to get a jury post Lori for Chad.
Right.
Where there's been so much more publicity now and a death penalty jury, which is a very different deal. So
yeah, it is.
in Lori's case, Lori's attorneys fought really hard against, this was before the death penalty was thrown out, but they had fought really hard against having a death penalty jury. So what that means is that the jury can be death qualified, basically meaning that they have to answer some questions indicating whether they would be willing to consider all sentencing options, including death. Because you could get people that you have qualified in other ways to be on the jury that stand strongly against the death penalty, and they don't want them on the jury. They only want people that are willing to administer the death penalty.
Which is a huge flaw in the system. Mm-hmm. And Jim Archibald initially brought this up in Lori's trial before they got the death penalty removed from her case. Mm-hmm. That's a huge flaw in the system because there is a bias toward the death penalty in the jury. Mm-hmm. That's a big problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, and statistically, that's what the jury is going to choose because it's their option. Right. I mean, they would have an option to not choose that. The other thing, I don't want to leave this yet. my brain's jumping forward and my head's not, well, anyway. One of the things I think is interesting is that we haven't heard a peep from John Pryor about the death penalty jury. He hasn't fought that. He hasn't argued about it at all.
No, interestingly. Although he was, he was fairly critical of Jim Archibald, and he and the prosecutor were critical of Archibald bringing that up before the trial.
Well, it won't matter because it's the same jury.
Right, right. But I know, but I thought it was interesting that Archibald did it in a different way, sort of in a different order.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of criticism against that. And then now Pryor has not done the same thing.
No. But Pryor hasn't fought the death penalty in the same way that Lori's attorneys did at all. I mean, Lori's attorneys had said outright, getting the death penalty off the table is our win.
Right.
That has not been a fight that Pryor's really taken on. I mean, he's tried here and there to, just weigh the tide there, but not in the way that death penalty certified attorneys did at all.
Right. Yeah. This is a very different deal with an attorney that does not have any experience with a death penalty case.
Yeah. Yep. So on the 1st of April, jury selection will begin.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be, of course, out of that huge pool of potentials that have passed the death penalty certification and then or qualification. Then they will start selecting jurors. They are saying they think that jury selection will last about a week.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there will be the main set of jurors, and then they'll have a good sized pool of alternates as well.
Yep.
So that they have a lot to choose from. And as you know, you don't know that you're an alternate until you're an alternate.
Right, so, right.
That's kind of an interesting thing. If Chad is found guilty, they will move immediately into penalty and the jury will be sequestered at that point until penalty phase starts, until penalty phase completes. And penalty phase could add as much as 2 weeks onto Chad's trial.
It's like it's own trial. It's a totally separate thing. Mm-hmm.
But that will start immediately, and the jury will be sequestered if and when that happens. Mm-hmm. So very different than Lori's in these aspects that I think are really, really interesting. The trial is happening in the same place Lori's was, in Ada County, in the big courtroom. Yeah. And they're doing the same thing they did with Lori's. You have to apply for a ticket to potentially go. But the big difference is they're live streaming this time.
Right.
And so we're just, as we've said before, but I'll reiterate, we're going to stream it every day. We will stream the entire thing. And every day that there is court, we will be here in the evenings to do a live stream to wrap it up. So what we're not going to do is live tweet this time. Where we're streaming it, there's really no need to. And our thumbs just, we asked them and they said no. So
they did. Yeah. Mine are still mad at me a whole year later. So yeah.
Yeah. Not doing it, but we'll be watching it along with you guys, and we'll provide a synopsis every evening that the trial is live.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Sorry, I don't know what's going on out in front of my house. I think it will be interesting, though, to see how many people actually go in person, because mm-hmm. this is so much different. We got the big email from the guy that organizes all of this, explaining mm-hmm. how it all works and what you have to do, blah, blah, blah. But then right in there, it says, but there will be a live stream on Judge Boyce's YouTube channel. And I'm just like, yeah. So, I mean.
Why?
Yeah.
Why go? I mean, some people will go. I will be very honest. We're not going to go. We're going to stay home, do it this way so we can be here with you guys. And
yeah,
I'm not going to mess around with it.
We live 5 hours away. I mean, it's just not a thing that is really possible for us. This makes it actually way easier. Mm-hmm. It's still very intense because we'll be watching the trial and staying really close in on what's going on with the trial. Mm-hmm. It's going to take over our lives for a while.
For sure. But it won't be sitting in those church pews at the courthouse, and it won't be.
Yay.
It'll be different. So there's a lot we don't know, because a lot of things have been sealed here the last week or two as far as filings. So there's a lot we don't know. Most of it, though, has to do with voir dire, as well as witnesses that one or the other of the camps are trying to preclude. You know, it's just the basic administrative stuff that you would expect leading up to a trial. It's just
it is
what it is. Yeah,
it is. But we definitely have some questions and some suppositions about what we may see and what we won't see. And
yeah, so one of those things we've seen, this is making me laugh, because we've seen some of the like, for example, there's a true crime, not a true crime, but there's a criminal psychologist on TikTok that we both like that was talking about this case, and he's wonderful, but he had a point very wrong. At any rate, there's been a lot of talk now about what is this filing, what is Tammy Daybell's statement, what is Tammy Daybell's statement?
Tammy Daybell's statement.
So there was a filing on 3/4. The comment was, again, it was a sealed, so we don't know much. The comment was to seal state's motion in limine and brief in support of motion for introduction of statement of Tammy Daybell. And then, of course, there was also a filing that was a brief in support of motion for introduction of statement of Tammy Daybell. What statement of Tammy Daybell? What statement? They've been talking to a medium? What statement?
Right.
Tammy Daybell. So we have a couple of thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
One of them could be whatever statement or whatever conversation she had with the police when she was shot at.
Mm-hmm. That's possible.
The other thought that I had and wondered is it possible that this is actually Heather Daybell?
Yes.
So
is it?
You know, we've had back channels all along because we're locals and we know people who know people who, and we know people, and you know,
yeah,
the people that know the mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we were told really early on in this, before the kids were ever found, was that Tammy had been trying to leave Chad, had been considering leaving Chad for a while. Chad was not a good husband. Chad was a philanderer. He was lazy as hell. He mm-hmm. didn't really work. All he did was his stupid book thing. He was living the life while his wife worked and took care of him.
Well, and it was pretty well known that, you know, Lori was not the first affair. There were other affairs. Mm-hmm. He had these little groupies that were following him around, all those preparing a people mm-hmm. conferences who were, you know, getting his signed books and stuff, and that there mm-hmm. were others.
Well, Julie Rowe has teased that all along, that perhaps she and Chad had an affair. Melanie Gibb had teased the same mm-hmm. thing, that perhaps she and Chad had an affair, or maybe started mm-hmm. an affair before the Golden Vagina swooped in.
Right.
But What we were told a long time ago is that Heather Daybell, who was Tammy's sister-in-law, she's married to Chad's brother, had been trying to help her leave Chad for a good year. And that they were going to let her come and live with them for a little while or help her get back to Utah to her family or whatever. But that there had been multiple conversations about helping her to leave. And that her decision had been to stay until their last son got off his mission. If you recall, he was serving an LDS mission at the time of his mother's death, their youngest son. Yeah. And she didn't want to divorce his dad while he was still on that mission and disrupt his mission. And so she had chosen to stay.
Which cost her life, which is really sad.
Yep. Yep. And it's not his fault. It's not that boy's fault at all.
No, not at all. It's just
his mom trying to do right by her son, which is really, really sad. But at any rate, so my question had been, is it possible that this is Heather Daybell relaying conversations, texts, emails, perhaps that she had had with Tammy? I don't know. That is a complete supposition, but it really makes
it does make you wonder, is there a conversation out there that someone had with Tammy? Maybe it's Heather, maybe it's someone else, mm-hmm. where she talks about some of her concerns or, you know, mentions fearing for her life even, or it could be a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. A lot of things.
Would be very specifically about Chad, because we did not see this mm-hmm. in Lori's trial.
No.
This is new. There are very few things in this case that are going to be new.
Yep.
This time around.
Yep. But this seems new from what we've seen in the past. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we also know, we've discussed this before, but let's get into it briefly. The recent filing to exclude recording and Prosecutor Wood as witness. What in the world could that be? How could Prosecutor Wood be a witness?
Well, just ask Mark Means. He knows all about it.
This originated, as Christy told you guys about last couple weeks ago when I was traveling, this originated in the very early throes of this case.
Yeah.
When, of course, Prosecutor Wood was having a conversation with Summer Shiflett, Lori's sister, and her attorney, and her skeezy, gross, bitch-ass attorney, recorded that conversation without the knowledge of Prosecutor Wood, and then turned that conversation over to Mark Means and John Pryor. And in that conversation, he had said, "We feel like Chad was the mastermind and that Lori needs to get a better attorney," because her attorney was Mark Means, who didn't know a thing about what he was doing.
Yeah.
And did all kinds of outrageous, wild stuff till he literally got kicked off the case. And at that time, he was so mad. He saw red. He wrote a filing that looked like he was halfway into a bottle of vodka at 2 a.m. when he wrote it.
It was practically in crayon. I mean, it really was just almost.
Yeah. And trying to, A, get Prosecutor Wood removed from the case for that, and also claiming that he had made himself a witness. Now, this wasn't the first time he said that, and it wasn't the last. But every time we turned around, he was constantly
trying to make him a witness.
Wood has made himself out to be a witness yet again. And the judge is like, okay, the prosecutor doing his job isn't making him a witness. He's the prosecutor, so that's what he's doing, his job. Not a witness, but it just went on and on, and Means lost that. John Pryor very lightly dipped his toe in it, but mostly just sat back and watched the fireworks. And at the time, we had said he is putting Means up, he's getting Means' hair on fire and getting all this shit going, and Means is running with it. It's stuff Pryor would have never had the balls to file.
But, well, and knew better than also, I think, but he kind of had this lackey that would do whatever, because he didn't know anything. He knew less about criminal defense than Pryor does, which is terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have found it hilarious the whole time. Like,
yeah. Well, when I saw this filing, I about died laughing. Here we go again, trying to the recording. That's what the recording is, if you're wondering. That's what the recording is. And trying to make wood a witness yet again. I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume that the judge smacked this down yet again. Because,
I'm sure he did.
We've seen nothing else about it.
Yeah. Or we'd be seeing some kind of weird hearing where wood was being called as a, it'd be some weird subpoena from a prosecutor to a prosecutor. And that's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen.
Not even close. So we believe that that's what that nonsense was about. Quite sure it was. But here we are. And honestly, if he was now a witness, he would have to be not a prosecutor. And he's still firmly on the case. So rest assured.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
That didn't work yet again.
So funny.
We had posted on Facebook and asked on YouTube if you guys had any specific questions you wanted us to answer. So let's dip into those. Janet wanted to know who owns Chad's house and land. Did it go to the attorney? Yes, it did. It went to the attorney. At this point, the only person on the deed, we did a title or a deed search, I don't know, about 10 days ago. And John Pryor is the only person on that deed. And one of Chad's cousins did an interview recently and said that, yes, his kids are paying rent to John Pryor.
And that was basically the way that he paid him a retainer to do this case.
Just gave him his house. Yeah.
And as we know, he's not been receiving any other money.
No. No. So what's going to happen with the house now? It's anybody's guess. I mean, is Pryor just going to keep it as an investment property? Is he, at the end of this, going to sell it? I wondered if the agreement had been that at some point, maybe Chad's daughter, Emma, and her husband would try to buy it back from Pryor. But maybe they just weren't prepared to buy at the time. It's, we don't know. We just don't know.
It's probably frighteningly more expensive now than it was when these murders occurred because of what's happened with real estate
here.
Although,
yeah,
I mean, Chad's kids live in the house where their mother was murdered and where those kids were buried.
Yeah.
Like in the property. It's so weird. It's weird and creepy as hell to me that they would want to be anywhere near that house.
Every time you walk in that shed, how can you not think about Tylee being chopped up in there? Every time you look in that back pasture, how can you not think about children being burned and buried? I don't know.
Or the bedroom where their mother was asphyxiated.
Yeah.
I mean, our parents died of cancer and we sold their house. We couldn't stand to live in it.
No.
This is murder. I mean, I just, it's so weird to me.
It is. And people do grief and whatnot differently. I know, but I couldn't. Wouldn't be me. But I know at one point Emma had said in an interview that it made her feel closer to her mom. So I'll give her that. But gosh.
Sure. I mean, if it helps, that's great. It's just hard to fathom.
Melissa said, I would like to have a clearer picture of who he was all involved with. I know he's in deep with Julie, but I'm sure he had a lot of other big name connections in those church adjacent groups. Well, he did. And some of those people really, really defended him hard, clear until the bodies were found. And then they went, oh, shit, I have made a terrible mistake.
Chad Dable who?
Yep. And then they all ran for the hills. So there's really not a lot to speak of now. It is true that, you know, he was doing the preparing of people tours, going around doing all this, the speaking and other prepper groups such as that. But since this all went down, they have all bailed from him in a hot minute. There really hasn't been a lot of involvement any longer. And even then, I don't know. I think that the people who did support him have gotten so quiet because they were very afraid of getting kicked out of the church.
Oh, yeah. This was not as much fear of associating with a murder as it was a fear of excommunication.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of conjecture that there are people in this area that still very much support him and very much still see him as the prophet. Mm-hmm. So
quietly. Yeah.
Quietly. They just don't say it out loud.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he wasn't as big. He was big in his own mind.
Mm-hmm.
But was he really that big? He really wasn't.
He wasn't out there rubbing shoulders with the Underground Railroad people and stuff mm-hmm. like that. I wouldn't say that he was, you know, all locked in with the more wealthy members of the church.
He really wasn't
doing their own thing. This was his little group.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's true.
Okay, Lauren, I loved this question. Lauren said, I want to know what led the cops to finally searching his property for the kids. I don't remember if the neighbors tipped them off or if it was just a Hail Mary. Well, no, they didn't. Well, there's talk mm-hmm. that maybe they did, actually, at some point somebody had said something. But what led them there were two things. Satellite photos of Chad's property mm-hmm. that indicated pre the kids disappearing what that back pasture looked like, and then post what that back pasture looked like. And it was obvious from the air that some of that land had been pretty seriously disturbed. So that was one of the things that they looked at. The other thing that they looked at was it was Alex's pings. They had pulled all of his cell phone data and were looking at that and seeing these times where right around the very dates that those kids disappeared, that Alex was at the house and it was suspicious. Well, and they were able. Oh, go ahead.
It was also the raccoon text to Tammy. Yes.
That was the other part of it, was the raccoon text to Tammy, because that just seemed weird. That whole text conversation he had with Tammy was weird. He gave her way more information than he normally did. The police have testified that their texts were typically like one or two word, you know,
mm-hmm.
very brief informationals, and that was it. And suddenly Chad's all chatty that morning going, hey, guess what? Saw a raccoon walking along the fence line, had to shoot it and bury it. And Tammy's like, good for you. Like,
well, and it was such a strange thing to say because raccoons are nocturnal. Mm-hmm. Probably not going to see a big raccoon walking along your fence line in the middle of the day when that text went out. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, it was a very smart FBI analyst who mm-hmm. caught the difference in the pattern of their communication uh-huh. there.
Yep.
That matched up with all that other information.
Mm-hmm. So it was those three pieces that they put together that they were able to use to get a warrant to search the property.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, to get a warrant from Google in order to look at the aerial stuff, in order to look at the cell phone stuff, in order to get that warrant, you have to get a warrant two times. It is a really big deal. Mm-hmm. It's not like the police can just call up, the powers that be and be like, or like to get into the iCloud and be like, hey, yeah, send this on over. Oh, no.
No,
you have to get a warrant to prove that that data exists. And then you have to get another warrant to prove that you have the right to access it or need it. And your mm-hmm. parameters have to be very specific. Yeah. It's a big deal. All of this, the geofencing and all of the cell phone data that they have pulled, not only is it exhaustive because there's so much of it, it is a needle in mm-hmm. a haystack to get to what you want, but mm-hmm. it's not easy to get that. It took a long time for the FBI it was the FBI that got all of that data, but it took a long time for them to be able to access all of that and get through it.
It did. Yeah. It was a huge deal. I remember in Lori's trial, them documenting every single warrant they had to show that they had reason to have all of that information. It was crazy. It took like a half a day just mm-hmm. for them to say out loud all the warrants that they had been granted.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And what they had to prove to get that far. And it's a lot. Okay. Irene wanted to know, have Chad's children continued to support him after Lori's conviction? Do you think any of them will testify at his trial? And if so, for which side? Well, they've been very quiet. Yeah. They've been very, very quiet, except for that one interview that they all did together a couple of years ago. We haven't heard shit out of Chad's kids. No. They did not attend anything in Lori's trial, and they have been dead silent. Now, we know that leading up to Lori's trial, we know that Chad had had an enormous amount of jail calls. So we do believe that he was, and visits. Yeah. We do believe that he was having quite a bit of visitors from his family, and probably from clergy. And so based on that, we do believe that there is still some support from his kids. We also know that his kids have completely estranged themselves from Tammy's family.
Yeah.
And
Tammy's sister really said that in Lori's trial.
Yeah, in Lori's sentencing, in her victim's statement. Yeah, and so, and that's really sad too. But at any rate, so we don't know for sure. We suspect that some of the kids probably are more supportive than others, but we don't really know. But I think it's a fascinating question. Are they going to testify?
Right.
They will not testify for the prosecution unless they are made to. I mean, they won't do that willingly.
So, yeah.
At all. However, the prosecution, I think, is very likely to call Garth.
I think so,
too. I don't
know
why they wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he was there the night of Tammy's murder.
Yep, there the night that Tammy died. He supposedly moved her body. Yeah, Garth, if Garth's not on the stand, I'd be really super surprised.
Yeah.
However, I'll bet he's the only one.
Mm-hmm. I think so, too. They don't really have any relevant information.
No.
Unless they use him as character witnesses. Maybe some of them will testify on his behalf. I don't know.
We don't know. It's possible that that Pryor will call them for the defense as well. We don't.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be a huge surprise to everybody.
Yeah.
If they end up on the stand. But as far as the prosecution is concerned, that's my take, is that if any of the kids are called at all, it will be Garth. And it will be in. But he could have been called in Lori's too, and he wasn't. So.
It's true. It's true. But we're dealing in this case, it's more. There's more stuff about Tammy's death, because this is about the actual physical commission of the murder rather than the lead up, the support of it, the conspiracy that is what Lori was charged with. But Chad is charged with the first degree murder of his wife. Uh-huh. So, yeah, we could see some significantly different things because of that.
For sure. Yeah. Jackie wanted to know if Chad bought an extra plot at the same time he bought Tammy's. Our understanding was no, that he bought one plot when it was for Tammy alone.
Her headstone is under a tree. It's in a place where you kind of get like one plot because it's at a weird, it's a weird shape, like around trees, you know. There's no indication whatsoever. Also, the headstone, a Mormon temple marriage headstone would have two plots and would have a headstone that already has him on it with missing his death date till he's buried there. That's not there. I've been to her headstone and it is
it's odd. It's odd. It's
very odd for what we grew up with, what you would expect. Totally, totally off.
A typical married couple, definitely their kids would be on it. It would be a good-sized headstone. It would have a temple on it.
Right.
Uh-huh. Their marriage and sealing date would be there. None of those things.
Nope.
Tammy and her ducks. Yep. Her kids.
Her kids.
Yep. Jackie also wanted to know what he did for work before he became an unemployed author. Well, funny story, Tammy.
Yikes.
He was in, or Jackie, not Tammy, good Lord. Jackie, he was an undertaker. Not an undertaker. He worked at the...
He was a grave digger.
He was a grave digger. Yeah.
And a sexton, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a sexton. Likely at the same cemetery where Tammy was buried, actually. He was a sexton
maybe
at a couple of different cemeteries in Utah. That was a lot of what Chad did before he started writing books.
He started as a gravedigger as a teenager.
Yes. Yep. He has a whole book about it. He wrote a
book about it. Mm-hmm. Not recommended.
10 out of 10. Do not recommend. 0 stars. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Mm-hmm. That was actually one of the things that his daughter said in that interview was that
yes.
There's no way he would be that careless and bury the kids like this because he was an experienced grave digger and he would know how to do it correctly to not get caught.
And, you know, the FBI came back and shot that right down and said that it was actually those graves were dug by someone who did know how to dig graves, that it was pretty clear, particularly J.J. Vallow's grave was dug by someone who knows how to dig a grave.
Yeah. Yep. Turns out you can get caught even if you have dug a grave before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank God.
Jen's question is going to blow our minds. We're not going to have time for all of this, but we're going to give you a very brief one. She said, I'd like a clearer timeline of everything that happened. From Lori's ex-husbands and whatnot with dates, because I really don't understand the time between it all happening and such. Okay.
Okay. So Charles Vallow. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, Lori was married first. Well, Lori was married 5 times, but Lori's third husband was Tylee's dad. And a guy by the last name of Ryan, Joe Ryan. And Joe Ryan died in kind of a suspicious way. A lot of people believe that Lori had a hand in that. I want to say in 2017.
2017 or 2018, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, his also was an unattended death. And he was dead in his apartment for a fair amount of time before he was found. And then cremated. And that's the one death that I think won't ever get justice because I think that Joe Ryan does deserve justice.
He does. And yeah, there's nothing they're going to be able to do.
There was a very contentious custody situation between Tylee between Lori and Joe for a lot of years. So we'll start with that one. Then moving forward to Charles Vallow. Charles, of course, was murdered in July of 2019.
Yeah.
And then I think 2019, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's 2019 is when most of these murders occurred.
All of these things went down. This was July of 2019. And then at the end of August in 2019, Lori and the kids moved from Arizona to Rexburg, Idaho, chasing Chad. Mm-hmm. And then in September, by the end of September, both of the kids were gone. Tylee disappeared first. About 10 days later, JJ had also disappeared.
Yeah, it's like the 9th of September and the 19th of September are roughly believed to be their death dates.
Yep. And then move into October. That's when there was an attempt on the life of Brandon Boudreaux. Brandon, of course, was Lori's nephew or ex-nephew at the time, or soon to be ex-nephew, Melanie Pawlowski's ex-husband. And then there was also an attempt on Tammy's life in October. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Tammy died. I want to say on October 19th.
Yeah. Yeah, I think October 19th.
October 19th. Then, finally, sometime in September-ish, October-ish, Kay Woodcock, who was desperately trying to find her grandson, JJ, figured out how to find Lori. She had been calling the police. She had been asking. She had had different resources working on it. But what she discovered is she had Charles's password to his Amazon account. And she was able to log into it and see where Lori, who was also using Charles's Amazon account, was sending stuff. You know, rings. And
shitty wedding rings and dresses and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that's how they found Lori. So then, of course, in November, the police came around wanting to know where the kids were. And that's when Lori and Chad fled to Hawaii.
And they'd already been married in Hawaii prior to that.
Uh-huh.
Like they went to Hawaii, came back, then went to Hawaii again.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This time, you know, and that was Lori and Chad went to Hawaii and got married just within a couple of weeks of Tammy's death. So they go to Hawaii. In the meantime, the police go, that's kind of a weird story about Tammy now that we think about it. And they issued an exhumation. Tammy was exhumed on the 11th of December. And then Alex, Lori's brother, who was a sidekick in all of this, and you guys just haven't heard enough about Alex, you will in the trial, because, mm-hmm. you know, he's dead. But he died the next day. And yeah. that death was ruled a pulmonary embolism. There's a lot of questions about the hows and whys of Alex's death, but we just aren't ever, I think, going to know. So in the meantime, these fools are sitting in Hawaii, essentially hiding out and spending up Tammy's life insurance money as fast as they can go. And
the kids' Social Security that they were getting mm-hmm. from their dead fathers. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, in January, the courts here in Rexburg issued a demand to Lori that she had to return to Rexburg and produce the kids. Because they were that concerned. Things just didn't seem to be right. At that point, they had been lying to people right and left, telling Chad's family that Lori had never had kids, telling other people that Tylee had been deceased for a while. Lots of lies had been told, and the police and the CPS here were kind of like, all right, something is way wrong here. So, of course, that date that Lori was supposed to show up and bring the kids back here came and went, and she didn't. Woodcocks were here. They did a press release. You know, we were here watching for this at this point, but no Lori. So then they arrested Lori in Hawaii and extradited her in February back to Rexburg.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, began, and it wasn't for murder at that point, of course. It was just for essentially failing to turn the kids over, you know, and tell the truth about where they were. All the while, she's telling everybody, the kids are fine. They're happy. Everything's good.
And I know obviously. Exactly where they are.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they're happy. They're happy. She said that so many times. Right. So she's back here. Chad comes back. He doesn't live at his house. He lives with a friend in Rigby for a while, kind of hides out there. It was one of his big supporters from before. And then, of course, they start fighting it out in court over Lori. And then, of course, in June, the kids are found and Chad is arrested. And then
probably
know the rest from there. Yep. Yep. And that's probably, you know, enough to make your head spin, but that's the basic timeline.
Yes, it is.
Real quick, Janet wanted to know, it looks like Chad and Lori burned through that $400,000 from Tammy's life insurance to the point that Chad had just a little bit left on the day they dug up the kids.
Yeah.
Do we know what they blew that money on? Well, yeah, they did pay off some debt with that money. And... we think it might have actually paid off the house with that money as well. We're not entirely sure. Paying for the way they were living in Hawaii was not cheap. They were paying about $3,500 a month on a condo there, but they were only there a couple of months. But on various things. I think a lot of Chad's money had already been spent on Lori's attorneys at that point.
Yes.
Because when Lori first came back here, they had picked up on a, when Lori first came back here, they had hired this dream team out of Boise that were there for her arraignment and then promptly quit because they realized this was a bunch of bullshit. But anyway, I think a lot of his money actually got spent on Lori's legal issues in the very beginning. But we're going to end it here, and we'll still be talking about this a lot up to the lead up to the trial starting. Don't you worry.
Oh, yeah.
But hopefully that helps to answer a few more questions and get you thinking about what this is going to look like. So buckle your seatbelts, boys and girls. It's going to get crazy. Well, this has been yet another production of the True Crime Squad. Thanks for being here, guys.